Untied. Today I'm very pleased and honored and thrilled to have as my guest Nolan Bushnell, who was the founder of Atari and sort of the father of the video game industry. Nolan, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's good to be here. Great fun.
So, Nolan, I'm sure you've told this story 1,000 times. I've not heard it, but tell me how you started Atari, a classic video game company. I certainly played Atari as a kid. Every kid I knew wanted to have an Atari video game machine. We actually couldn't afford one, but everybody wanted one. Tell me about that.
Well, it was really a confluence of two random occurrences. The first is... I put myself through college working in an amusement park while studying engineering at the University of Utah, which was one of the few universities in the world that was playing around with video and big computers. And I knew the economics of the arcade business, and I thought, boy, if computers get cheap enough and I could put this... you know, a game on these displays in an arcade, that there'd be, I could make a business out of it. And I was right.
Where did the name Atari even come from?
Came from the game of the Japanese game of Go. China, Korea, and Japan all have their version of the black and white game. I think it's called Wei Chi in China. And I forget the other one. But anyway, in Japan, a polite warning to your opponent that he's going to lose a bunch of stones, you say Atari. Mm. And I just like that as a name.
Hmm. And so how did the first video game actually come about? Did you develop that technology? Did you bring it in from somewhere else? How did the first video game actually come about?
I designed it... using technology, well, you know, regular flip-flops and gates and things like that. It was before the microprocessor. So it wasn't really even a computer. It was what is known technically as a state machine.
Mm.
But what it did is... allow a video game to be built probably 8 years sooner than it would have been anyway once the microprocessor was created.
And what was that first game? Was that Pong? What was that first game?
No, the first game was actually Computer Space, which was my attempt to emulate the game that I played on the computers, which was Space War, which was done by... a guy named Steve Russell in 1962 at MIT.
Hmm. And so what year did that first Atari game actually come out?
1971.
Huh. And what was the response when it first came out?
It was confusion, a little bit of that. The game was too hard to play. All my friends loved it. All my friends were engineers. But a guy in a beer bar... it was a little too complex. You had to turn the rocket ship around and retrofire and things. But it sold about $2.5 million worth of product, which was pretty good. I licensed it to Nutting Associates, and I got royalties. My partner and I, Ted Dabney, got royalties. And that gave us enough cash flow with another contract to set up our own shop. And then we hired Al, and he did Pong, and we were off to the races.
Hmm. So did you know at the time when you first came out with that first game, even though it wasn't wildly successful, that you were onto something? Did you have any sense about, you know, what video games were going to do? Tell me a little bit about how, you know, the future.
I absolutely thought we had a tiger by the tail. And I felt that even as primitive as the technology was, I felt that we had so much range of kinds of things to do that we had a business that could grow and prosper. And my job, the hardest part, was just keeping the wheels on, because we started the company with $250. And we didn't have a penny of venture capital until we were probably 30, 40 million in sales. Doing that was really hard because we just never had enough money to do what we wanted to do.
So tell me a little about how Atari then evolved to your involvement with Chuck E. Cheese. Tell me about a little bit about how that happened.
I felt that we were selling games at the time for about $1,500 a piece. In coin drop of those coin-operated games, they'd make $30,000 to $40,000, and so you didn't take rocket science to say, "Hey, you know, I'm on the wrong end of this equation. I should be operating them." I didn't want to compete with our customers who were buying our machines, and so I felt, and the competition would be for locations to put them in, and so I felt that I had to create my own location, and that's where Chuck E. Cheese came in. Chuck E. Cheese actually started inside Atari. But when I sold it to Warner, Warner Communications, they didn't want it. And so I said, I'll take it. And I was happy.
Oh, so you actually started the Chuck E. Cheese. I thought you purchased that business.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Outside of, you know, out of Atari.
Right. So when you kind of look back in those early days, I mean, obviously both franchises were wildly successful. Is there something you would have done differently, though, now looking back?
Yeah, I wouldn't have sold Atari to Warner. They basically dismembered the company. You know, they thought of themselves as a record company. And so they didn't understand that it was really a technology company and that the hardware had to evolve. They just couldn't, you know, do software cartridges. Software cartridges was massively profitable, but the hardware platform, the 2600, it only had 128 bytes of memory because memory was so expensive. Well, by the time we came out with, you know, once the unit was actually on the market, memory prices had dropped by a factor of 100. And even a little bit more. So all we would have had to have done is to just do another product that had more memory, and everything would have been easier and better, and smaller pixels and better graphics. I mean, everything would have been better.
Why did you sell at the time?
The 2600 was a big project. And I needed to raise money for that Christmas season. I could have gotten through in 2020 hindsight. I just couldn't have built as many. And, you know, you get fearful about competition. Of course, the product was good enough that there was actually no competition for 8 years.
Did Atari do better after it was acquired, or it had its best days when you were there, or did it go downhill after that?
Oh, no. They poured money into it, and the product was so good, you know, they almost hit $2 billion in sales in 1982, I think. But they didn't release a single product that wasn't in the labs when I left. So they were an excellent harvesting machine. They just weren't very good planters.
Were you involved with the company after it was sold, or you were pretty much out of it?
I stayed as chairman for 2 years.
Okay.
Then I left and focused all my time on Chuck E. Cheese.
Right. So what about since Chuck E. Cheese? I mean, what else have you done in your storied career that are some of the highlights?
Well, I did the first automobile navigation system. We mapped the world. If you look at Google Maps or any of those, it's all based on our software that we created in 83. I did the first online shopping system, which we ended up selling to a pharmacy chain. I did a robotics company that was a big failure. It was too soon. I did a toy company, sold to Mattel, or not to Mattel, but to Hasbro. And I'm doing an education software company right now.
Can you say the name of it?
Oh, yeah, Brainrush.
Oh, okay, got it. So when you kind of look back, that's obviously a lot of different things. What, you know, which company do you think you was the most fun, you enjoyed the most, or, you know, was the best memories, would you say?
Oh, I think that Atari had the most range. I think Chuck E. Cheese was really fun for the first couple of years when we were figuring out. Once we got it sort of really nailed down, the only thing that made sense was to replicate it, and that's not that much fun. The robotics business was interesting, but the technology was very hard. I don't know. I've had fun in all of them.
So what are your plans now? What are you working on currently?
I'm working on an entrepreneurial school to teach entrepreneurship very quickly and efficiently using some of the best resources and technology. And it's located in Las Vegas. And the reason for that is we think that trade shows are very, very important because they're like a snapshot of business or of an industry. And I think so many young people and old people don't really understand the diversity and the breadth of industry in the world. And I think you can get a snapshot of that in Las Vegas. I mean, they have 500 conventions, 1,000 conventions. And so you could almost pick your industry, and in the year they'll get there.
What's the name of that incubator?
It's called Snap Institute.
Okay. Is it up and running and everything now?
Yep. First classes will begin September 6th.
And are you bringing in outside speakers and stuff, or what are you doing?
We're doing a whole series of little 8-minute videos of people from all over the world, and then we'll have some Skype lectures from some of my friends who are some of the best entrepreneurs in the world. Oh. And, now, of course, I'm going to be teaching class regularly by Skype.
Well, Nolan, this has been a fascinating conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time. When you'll have to come back and tell me about how successful your incubator is. This is Richard Hsu and Nolan Bushnell. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.